Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Joining me on the line, I'm skipping the pleasantries because on the line with me is somebody I try to have on at least once a year. He is a chef, he is on TV, and occasionally he's a sparring partner for his lovely wife, Chef Robert Irvine. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm crazy busy, but loving life.
And Robert is going to be back on Food Network on Sunday, August 12th with he'll be on Worst Cooks in America, his first time since 2011. And apparently, sir, there's some unfinished business.
Yeah, well, you know, Ann and I have this feisty relationship, shall we say. And when we left 2011, Worst Cooks, I was not happy, for sure, for a lot of reasons. So it's redemption time.
Good rivalry there. So, okay.
Yeah,
so,
oh, yeah, big time.
Now, not giving away too much, but can you tell us what your – did you have a different approach or strategy this time around?
No, exactly the same thing. One of the things I learned in the first season was, you know, you should stick to the rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, at some point, somebody didn't stick to the rules and somebody lost. Mm-hmm. So – I learned how to play the game a lot better, not from a cooking standpoint, but from a personal standpoint.
Okay. And can you tell us what do you think are some of Chef Ann's strengths and weaknesses when it comes to this competition?
Let me tell you, Ann Burrell is an amazing teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. And she should be after she's done X amount of seasons of Worst Cooks. And I really do mean that when I say that. She is a tremendous teacher. I learn things from her. So sometimes her temper gets in the way of her, bless her, her feistiness. Well, you'll see what happens.
I say, when it comes to mentoring these the everyday people that try to improve their cooking skills, what is easy to teach and what is possibly the most difficult?
Well, I think, you know, for me, I'm lucky enough that I get to do that every day of my life around the world with my daytime job, you know, with the military and all these things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficult thing is to give confidence to somebody when they have a knife, right? And then give confidence that they can do something with speed without hurting themselves or burning themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, listen, you're going to burn yourself. You're going to cut yourself. I do it. I've been doing it for 52 years. It's part of the job. But those that succeed listen, and they don't make the same mistakes twice. And in Worst Cooks, unfortunately, there's a very short window to learn. You know, the first episode, somebody's gone. And it's sometimes they don't get a chance to prove, and they could be really good. But at that particular time, at that particular moment, they're the worst one in that bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has bad days, including you and I and Anne.
Yep.
it's a race, and it's getting the stuff done the way we show you to do it, and then you're on your own. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to watch those that pick it up quickly, those that don't. One thing that I am not a lover of is jokers in a kitchen. You know, I don't like people to play around. I'm too serious for that. I don't laugh. I don't get involved with people. I teach people. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the toughest part.
I would say one of my questions was going to be there's usually in competitions like this, there are some stock characters, one of which is somebody who thinks they're hysterical in the kitchen. So I know where you stand on that. Is there somebody like that in this season?
There's a lot of them.
Okay.
So you can imagine how my season is.
Let's see. There's usually somebody. Let me know if I'm correct or not. Is there usually somebody that is single and wants to do this for, or maybe is somebody that wants to do this for their girlfriend, boyfriend, or maybe their spouse?
Yep.
Somebody whose focus is really not happening.
A lot of.
Is anybody flirting with you this year?
Not so much me, but with Anne.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I know there's, yeah. So anyway, so, and also when it comes to doing these, how many, I mean, I know we have a different episode every week, but what's the timeline as far as filming these? How many weeks did it take?
It's a 6-week process.
Okay.
You know, and it's a tough 6 weeks. These contestants work from early in the morning to late at night. They don't have the phones, and there's a set of rules and all these things that, so they can't look up recipes and don't, you know, They only get what we teach them, and they have to execute that. So it's pretty intense. I mean, it really is, you know, boot camp. So it's an intense 6 weeks.
Cool. And what I think what's fun watching you guys, because I've seen you and Ann do stuff on TV before, but you guys are able to find that line between competition, mentoring, and having a good time. Is that correct?
You know, there's one thing about Food Network, which I love, you know, and I have loved since I started way back when. You know, we can be rivals, and and believe me, this is probably going to be tapped as the feistiest worst cook in history to date, believe me. But I respect, and there is a line, and I always have fun. I always have fun. Does it get intense? Oh, my goodness. Intense is an understatement, and I mean that. But at the end of the day, you know, we're doing something really good for all these folks that are there trying to do something. Even if they only last 2 or 3 weeks into the season, somebody's going to win the $25,000. Somebody's going to go home with stuff that they never knew but now feel more confident with. So I always like that part of these shows, you know. It's like tonight I'm in Biloxi, Mississippi, and I get to see my winner, or you know, that I mentored in another competition. So, I like to see those folks who want to succeed, and that's what we do.
And I say, from an audience standpoint, it's fun for us if we've either been in that situation where we're sautéing with something or cooking with something, or we know when something goes right or something goes wrong. We learned right away, never try to prepare you shepherd's pie. That seems like that's a downfall.
Well, you know, the one thing I did in season two was I pushed the person that I have to be like a professional chef.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no excuses for me, and I'd done the same thing this time around. To me, if you're focused enough, you can achieve anything in this world with a great attitude, a can-do attitude, and that's how I teach. I'm intense. And if you listen, you will succeed.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying that we won, by the way. People in life will succeed if they listen to people that have the knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So, ladies and gentlemen, Worst Cooks in America is running Sunday, premiering Sunday, August 12th on Food Network. And Robert Irvine will be back for Kitchen Redemption. This almost sounds like your wife's line of work. We're cutting promos like they're wrestling matches. This is fun.
Yeah. She's over in England right now doing Comic-Con in England, which is, you know, bless her. And miss her a little bit, actually. It's kind of weird. But when you spend so much time together, and I'm on a tour right now doing a live show in Biloxi tonight. We're in Houston yesterday and Philadelphia the day before that. And
And we're in, where are we, Vegas tomorrow for our one-year anniversary.
Yes, congratulations on the Public House anniversary.
Yes, just the 28th Saturday, 1 year. In fact, we opened on the 27th, and we celebrate on the 28th. So it's and that's going great. Tropicana is doing amazing, and the Penn Gaming team have been just amazing partners to us. So. Yeah, it's been a busy couple of weeks.
I bet.
Busy couple of weeks.
So just so folks know, can you tell us what is the difference between a public house and, say, a pub?
Well, public house, in reality, it is a pub, okay?
Right.
In England, if you say a public house, it's a pub.
Okay.
But in the States, it's slightly different. What public house means is a gathering place. And that's what I wanted to call it because my dad used to enjoy a pint of beer and social in a pub every night, and I mean every night. And the pub itself, or the restaurant itself, and the bar area is set up like an old pub like we used to have in England.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very neat. It's called Pat's Bar. So everything you see, a picture of my dad in there, and my mum and dad are called Pat and Pat. That's, you know, so we have a Pat's for the ladies' restroom and a Pat for the men's restroom. It's just very quaint and cute, and the food is very quirky English, but mixed across the world of my travels with a twist. The bar is amazing. We've got our own tequila. We partner with Patron. You know, I'm in the liquor business.
Mm-hmm.
We have a vodka gin line with Boardroom Spirits out of Lansdale, Pennsylvania. Which is all organic and natural and amazing. So we've really gone into it in a big way, and hopefully we'll open a lot more of those down the road sometime, a little smaller because Vegas is 275 seats, which is a big restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and it gets packed. excuse me. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
And so, folks, just so you know, it's at the Tropicana in Las Vegas. In fact, the last time I was in Las Vegas, which was Thanksgiving week of 2016, the condo that I was staying at, when I opened the curtains in the morning, I saw a giant Robert Irvine posing on the side of the hotel building. So thanks for looking.
It's still there.
Is it still there? he's watching over me. My gosh.
Yeah, it's when you fly in, it's kind of scary, actually, to see these things. And, you know, it's like a billboard night. It's so funny because social media, I get people saying at the MGM, at the Trop, and all these other places, and they send me pictures on Twitter every day. Hey, we saw you today. You know, it's just funny. We have a cardboard cutout of me in the restaurant when I'm not there or even when I'm there. It's mm-hmm. just funny.
Also, speaking of which, so you also have your any updates as far as your food line and the Fit Crunch?
Well, Fit Crunch is doing amazing. It's in, 170 countries, 84,000 locations. We just bought out protein powder. We're about to bring out little protein balls, little snacks,
mm-hmm.
and protein bark. The food line, we're about 30-something SKUs all across the country, commissaries and the military. So that's doing great. We just shot a new show, pilot for CBS. Which is amazing. I can't tell you too much about it.
Okay.
But it's all kids involved. So there's a lot of great things happening, and we've just hired an amazing guy by the name of David Reed, special operations guy, lost his leg in Afghanistan 2010. So he's just come on board to run our foundation as that's getting bigger and badder, as I say. You know, we're doing a lot of charity stuff and making things happen for our men and women that wear the cloth of our nation. We're growing strong. The Pentagon's doing amazing. We just got into the coffee business, so we're looking to hire all our veterans into these new coffee locations, train them, and then give them the actual coffee shop.
Okay.
So, you know, philanthropy is my thing. It excites me to do things for other people. It really does, you know. And people say, well, you know, you can do that, you make a lot of money. And you know, Matthew, that I give a lot of money away.
Yep. I ask them for $20 all the time, folks.
And it makes me feel happy.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I don't know how to explain when you help somebody what it feels like when you go to bed at night. It's, and it's not It's just you feel good.
It's
and that's what this whole team, starting from Justin, who sets the tempo, and the rest of the team around the country. And we've got a lot of people now. You know, we're almost 700 people. So, you know, it's a good thing. Growing is good. A lot of pains that go with that.
Yep.
But it's just, life is good. TV is good. You know, we've been on Food Network now for, even though the shows have played and reran, and we've done Food Network Star. Actually, Food Network Star, this Sunday, I'm on there this Sunday.
Excellent.
In the finale. So that's pretty cool. So I've got a chance to do a lot of great stuff. Just that Restaurant Impossible was not on, although we aired, you know, almost 13 seasons on it all over the world. Mm-hmm. And it does great in the reruns, too. I hope one day, and I mean this, that somebody big out there is listening and we can bring that back in a different format, bigger, because I think it, if you remember, we did 183 episodes of that show and touched a lot of people's lives,
yep.
Not only in the restaurant business, but the Paul Newman camp, the Joplin, the Lottery, Mississippi, where I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
We did an awful lot of good work with that show, so I'm hoping it'll come back at some point, and hopefully Dinner Impossible.
Yep. Well, ladies and gentlemen, and never forget, there's a lot of shows where they're rescuing things and restoring things. Never forget, there's a certain gentleman, he's on the show right now, who started it all. It's kind of like blues songs getting covered by rock bands later on. So this is the original deal right here.
Yeah, you know, the funny part is, I'm flattered that Gordon Ramsay is doing the 24 hours of hell, or whatever it's called. Don't know how you can fix something in 24 hours. We did it in 48, and I have real statistics. I think after the first year of touching every restaurant, that 183, we had 74% success rate.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are six and a half years later, and I still believe we're at 54% of restaurants that are open. So.
And that's a tough line of work to begin with. So,
Yeah.
Did I hear you connected with John Taffer?
John Taffer and I have been friends for a long, 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 long time. He is an amazing human being. He's big, he's bold, he's brash. And somebody say, well, that's you. And I'm like, no, John's a little bit more than me.
Mm-hmm.
So I met John at an airport, funnily enough, many, many years ago when he was coming back off vacation with his wife, and Gail and I were together, and he walked into a club. And I'd been tweeting back and forth with him for a long time, and we finally got face-to-face and become great friends, and we did the NRA show, the National Restaurant Show in Chicago. There was John and I on a panel, and the opening to that panel was we both walked out left and right stage and just stared at each other, and then we went to punch each other. Oh, it was hilarious. And the pictures that came out of that were amazing. And I've always wanted to work with John,
mm-hmm.
And at some point I will. Because I just find him with the same kind of person. He's so knowledgeable about what he does. I just did a podcast, and here's something about John. He donated $5,000 to my foundation on that podcast, which was a shock. He didn't need to do that, but it was very kind of him. Just a great guy. So, yeah, we're in fact, Monday in Vegas, he'll be at the restaurant with me, if not tomorrow. He did say he's going to try and come, but... I just love the guy.
I think you two should do karaoke together.
That would be hilarious. Have you seen the size of John Taffer? He's a big guy.
Or you guys could form a tag team, you know.
Yeah, it would be. Gail would like that. Gail would love that in a wrestling. He could be our manager or something. I don't know. But,
exactly.
Yeah.
Has Gary Sinise asked you to play tambourine in his band yet?
I've been playing tambourine with Gary for 7 years, and I suck at it. It's so funny, because on the last song of every concert that we play with our military at the hospitals, you know, we do the Invincible Spirit Festivals, and on the last song, I always go up and I play the cymbals and the bongo box and all these other little tricks that they have there. And it's so funny, because the first time I did it a long time ago, and I'm musically tone deaf. And I mean, there isn't a musical body in me, note in me.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you know, they're just telling me tap, tap, tap. And when you reach these certain notes, you know, you bang the cymbals and you do this. Well, I was banging the hell out of these cymbals And Gary just turns around because it sounds wrong in his ears. And he just looks at me. He's like, no. So I do it every time we do the show now.
Well, let's you just let Gary saute something. That'll balance it out.
He is he's an amazing patriot. I call him the Bob Hope of the modern day era, giving himself to our troops. And, we'll be in Germany together in August doing the same thing.
I got to see him do a Streetcar Named Desire on stage in Chicago, and it was extraordinary.
Yeah, his theater there does really well. You know, he has a theater there.
Yep.
And he's just opened almost like a museum in L.A. of the start of his foundation, mm-hmm. which was a Bush era, and it was Bush that taught him to start it, and he's done so many great things with that. We work together a lot. And it's so funny because we do a Sky Bowl event every year in Dallas, Fort Worth for 12,000 folks. And we had Tim McGraw and Faith Hill there and Pitbull and all these other guys and Gary. And we had military chefs feeding, the military wounded and their caregivers and families, which is an amazing feeling. But now we've just taken a Sky Bowl, which is a snowball, which is the kids' piece where we take about 4,000 kids, and it used to be in Dallas every year. We take them for a week, and Terry Fader and some great folks would entertain, and we cook. And now that has come under Gary's umbrella of the Gary Sinise Foundation, and now we're taking it to Disney, so the kids that have lost a parent through war get a chance that they probably would never have ever got to go to Disney and spend a week and have all the benefits that they should have. Mm-hmm. So if all the listeners out there and they want to donate, it's very expensive. Go to Gary Sinise Foundation or the Robert Irvine Foundation.org and you can help us out. Or volunteer,
Exactly. Going back a little bit to the spirits, is that available? Is that just available on? I know it's on the East Coast, but is it in just commissaries?
We've just started in Nevada.
Okay.
New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, and we are about to start in Florida. So at some point, I will put up where you can get it. All ABC stores in Florida, you'll be able to get soon. All state stores in Pennsylvania. Mr. Lee's in Nevada, and obviously the hotels.
Okay.
And again, we just started to roll it out, but I've got to tell you, it is an amazing quality. If you like Tito's, you're going to love this because we're going to blow Tito's out the water.
And by the way, Fort Benjamin Harrison in Indianapolis could really use a coffee shop. I'm just saying.
Really?
Sure.
Ah, okay. So well, we're really excited about that project. There were some big meetings this week on it, and I went to Honduras. I met the four farmers that are growing my coffee. And there's another thing, I end up going to Honduras. I meet these farmers. I find a little coffee shop, funny enough, called Hope Coffee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And above that coffee shop is the school, where in Honduras it's very tough. You have to pay for your schooling, and an average coffee grower makes $8,000 a year. So we got involved in there and sourcing out computers for these kids. Things happen for a reason. I don't know what those reasons are, but I had the most amazing trip to Honduras and understanding the culture, the food, how the coffee and the problems with the coffee and the problems with the schools. And it's just amazing. We are so blessed in this country that we have what we have.
Exactly. And we also have I always explain to younger people, it's when it comes to food, drink, what have you, it's the never-ending battle between quality versus quantity.
Yeah, and obviously the price of that, where people, you got to think about when you sell something, what is the price of that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough, and it gets tougher to produce a quality product when people are not going to pay the extra 50 cents or whatever. And quality is always going to be driven by me. I'll figure cost out, but the quality has to be there. Otherwise, we don't do it.
Right. Now, if I remember right, you like your coffee a very particular way. Is that still the case?
Yes, I still drink my coffee at 200 degrees. Three raw sugars, six to the left, four to the right. Yeah, I'm a freak.
ladies and gentlemen, he keeps a thermometer with him at all times just for such emergencies.
I do. That is true. and it's funny, you know, we just did some great stuff with Coca-Cola. You know, we did the Coca-Cola 600, which was a Grand Marshal, which was so exciting. And I didn't even know, I don't know if you knew this, but Coca-Cola, if you imagine every military action that we've had since the beginning, Coca-Cola's been there.
Really?
And I saw this in, 75 years plus, you know, of modern day, obviously. And I saw all these museum pieces. Unbelievable. So, you know, Coca-Cola's doing a great job. So thanks to them for our military support, too. So that's a lot of fun with them, guys. A lot of fun.
And it's always good if it's still out there. If you find Coca-Cola in glass bottles, that means they're actually using real sugar as opposed to corn syrup.
I know. Isn't that great?
Yes. I mean, if you're going to indulge.
If you're going to do it, and it's like eating cheesecake, at least eat a good one that's got some good stuff in it.
Exactly. All right, shifting gears a little bit, because this is a film show. What was the last film you watched, sir?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. What did we watch? What have we watched? We watched two shows back to back, and I'm trying to think what the name of them are. Hang on a minute. I should have had this, shouldn't I?
if you'd known there was a quiz, you'd have studied.
I watched Skyscraper. I watched, what was the other one I just watched? Oh my goodness. Hang on a minute. I've got a check scale.
Check your, all right. While he's doing that. Worst Cooks in America premieres Sunday, August 12th on Food Network. Robert Irvine, always here at Film Sociology. I know he just recently watched Skyscraper. Was it the other Dwayne Johnson film? Was it Rampage?
No, it wasn't. No. It was.
This is great.
I'll tell you exactly what it was. I know, it's kind of funny, right?
It's great, intense scrolling sequences on radio.
You know what? Mamma Mia is one you're looking forward to. I know Mamma Mia is one I'm looking forward to, but that wasn't what I watched. It is, because I'm a nut about ABBA, but... what was the other one? Oh, my goodness. That is killing me right now. I do want to watch the new Mission Impossible one.
Well, I just saw...
Watch. You saw it?
I saw it last night. You'll love it.
And I want to watch The Equalizer because I love Denzel Washington.
Yep. We like mature gentlemen kicking butt. Always a favorite.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Robert, because
you know the movies I like the most.
Yes.
And this was the movie. I just got to figure out what the name was. Where there's an underlying message to society in it. You know, some movies that we find are you know, true life stories that have been kind of Hollywoodized.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some that are life lessons. And I like the life lesson movies a lot, you know. Whether it be with culture, whether it be with race, religion,
mm-hmm.
I like to learn something. And of course, you know, movies, we take a little Hollywood-esque approach to, but there's always, you know, when they say a true life story, there's always a lesson there.
Mm-hmm.
And I find them to be the kind of movies that I like to watch.
Well, the lesson learned in Equalizer is stop messing with Denzel Washington.
But I consider myself, I would like to be one of them guys.
Well, I saw you.
What is he doing? Taking care of people.
Yes. Well, speaking and going back a little bit with Mission Impossible, I saw you rappel off the side of a hotel building. I mean, that's something. I think that's something Mr. Cruise would do in his spare time as well. Has that been the craziest stunt you've done, sir?
I think it is. You know, I've jumped out of planes at 15,000 feet, et cetera. But to me, when I said. I was joking when I said it, you know, oh, well, let me just rappel off a building or rappel off a helicopter. it will make a big splash. And then when we rigged the, and it was jerry rigging, an L bar, if you like, it looked just like an L, mm-hmm. and I was going to rappel off it, but it didn't look like it could hold anything. So my first attempt, I was a little nervous, to say the least. It's 300 feet plus in the ground, above the ground, 28 stories, and I got to about the 17th floor, and the wind pushed me around, and I got back down and went back up. And as I was about to start the second rappel, a helicopter showed up, and it was a news helicopter, thinking that it was somebody going to jump off the top of the roof. So we had to do that really quick. But, you know, I wanted to make a splash in Vegas that nobody's ever done. And like Tom Cruise doing his own stunts, I thought, well, right, let's do it. I didn't think they would ever let me do it, but we did it.
Yep, and you're still here talking about it. That's good. No, Mission Impossible is about 2.5 hours, but it's constantly moving. And it's got the right balance of action and fun stuff and the disguises. So I think you'll enjoy these.
Well, I like him as an actor, and I like that he is he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I am looking forward to Mamma Mia. You know, I'm an ABBA fan, ridiculous ABBA fan, always have been. I would play Winner Takes It All before my Dinner Impossible days, every show,
mm-hmm.
every show. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Well, now I know Gail is a big sriracha fan. Have you guys done sriracha lime popcorn?
She has.
Okay.
I won't do that. I am just getting into, I'll put a little bit in soy sauce when I'm having a pot sticker or something, but I am really, I'm not that heat guy.
Okay.
And she is. She, you know, she has it for oatmeal and breakfast, you know. Gail puts sriracha on everything.
Now, if I remember correctly, are you still not a fan of cinnamon?
So here's the thing. Well, it's a good story.
Okay.
So. I just finished a show with Travel Channel, and one of the things I was following was cinnamon. Cinnamon as we know it, which is cassia. So I started my journey in Salem, which you think of Salem as witches, but actually Salem was the first city that produced millionaires, and it came from cinnamon. So I started in my journey in cinnamon in Salem, and then I actually went to Sri Lanka. Cinnamon in this country, we use a lot of cassia, which is very peppery and bitter, which is the one I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to Sri Lanka, which was built for the cinnamon trade, the British India Company came in, they built a fortress called Sri Lanka to protect the cinnamon because it was so so expensive and you know, so protected. Then the Dutch came in, beat the British, and did the same thing, kept the cinnamon. So in Sri Lanka, we have real cinnamon, which is, I find, amazing. It's a little bit more expensive, but it's way better. I don't like cassia, but I do like real cinnamon from Sri Lanka.
Okay, so we have to look for that. I think of you because I do the what I tend to do is when I grill peaches, I put a cinnamon, equal parts cinnamon and sugar, and I put it on the sliced half. And then put those on the grill.
Nice.
So.
Well, if you use the real cinnamon, you will love it.
Well,
it's not bitter and it's not sweet. It's just perfect. And I actually got to go to an island, the Cinnamon Island. I got to strip the cinnamon tree itself, dry it, and I got to cook in an authentic Sri Lankan home. With these three family members, and I brought cinnamon back with me because it was that good.
And when will this air? Do you know?
Somewhere in August. We did two shows on salt, truffles, cinnamon, and oil.
Okay.
And chocolate, sorry.
Nice. That'll be the Travel Channel in August. And, of course, Worst Cooks in America premieres Sunday, August 12th on Food Network. Robert, I know we're short on time, but I really, really appreciate your time always. And get some breathing time.
Yeah, I've got to remember that. I'm going to take you back when I remember this movie because it was so good.
I will update the listeners. That was prime radio. I really appreciate your time, Robert, always.
Oh, man. I hope you guys are doing well. And it's a crazy time at the moment, but all is great. So we appreciate you, and just nuts right now. Keep sending me the pictures and stuff, and I'll keep in contact, okay?
All right, we'll do.
All right, buddy.
All right, take care. You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yep, happy to say film sociology regular guest Robert Irvine, Worst Cooks in America, that premieres Sunday night on Food Network. So go check that out. Now, I have an update on that last interview. That was great. 4 days later, I got a note from Robert that Gail, his lovely wife, reminded him that they saw Ocean's 8. So I guess a lot of time had passed between Ocean's 8 and when he spoke with me. They did also recently, this past week, saw the new Mission Impossible film and really, really enjoyed that. So anyway, it happens. Sometimes you get a brain freeze. Sometimes it happens on the radio. So thanks, Robert. All right, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back after the break, some reviews, what's happening at the drive-in, what's on DVD, and a dead person we like who's better known for TV than movies. That's never stopped me before. Stick around. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
TNA Knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Socey. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. And actually, special last week, this past weekend, or Friday, really. If you go to Indie Style, you can see me in my full NPR uniform with jacket discussing the movies that opened this past weekend. Of the four, gosh, we had The Meg, we had Dog Days, we had Slender Man, and Black Klansman. I opted for Black Klansman, the new film from Spike Lee, who also co-wrote the film and, of course, co-produced it with Jordan Peele, who, of course, we all know won an Academy Award earlier this year for his documentary, Get Out. This is based on a true story. Now, every other film is based on a true story, I understand, but this one's actually interesting. It's about Ron Stallworth, played by John David Washington, who was the first African-American police officer in Colorado Springs, who managed to infiltrate the KKK via the phone. Used his white guy voice, so it's a little maybe sorry to bother you meet Serpico. But gets his foot in the door and talks one of his fellow officers, played by Adam Driver, to be the physical essence of his character. So we have two men working together. It's a different type of buddy cop picture, but not really, where Driver has to do all the tension stuff on foot while Washington's character follows him around. And then, of course, the phone connections between Stallworth and the Klan. Nice chemistry between Washington and Driver. There's because it's Spike Lee, it's a bit long and it's a bit cinematically indulgent, but I don't mind his indulgence because it pokes at a hornet's nest that needs poking. We have not just the story of infiltrating the Klan in the 70s, but we also deal with everything from racism in the police force, what happens when an undercover officer falls for somebody he is investigating or following, in this case, a young lady who is the head of the Black Student Union in Colorado, police officers dealing with their own heritage. Driver's character is Jewish, and it's actually brought up way more than I had anticipated. And I believe, as The Onion put it, or the AV Club, this film also clowns on the Klan in a great way. There's right out of the gate, there's a prologue featuring Alec Baldwin, and it's him doing his hate speech. But also it's a blooper reel at the same time. You'll see it when you get there. Expect long speeches. Expect a dance number, and there is in a club, and enough mixture of heavy handedness. But as I said before, I don't mind his heavy handedness, along with some pretty entertaining undercover tension. Overall, I like this film. It's messy, but I'll take his messy work and imperfect, or as Kobe's favorite word, flawed. I'll take that over a swing and a miss and a train wreck anyway. But this is the first Spike Lee film I've seen since Chi-Raq from 2015. I know he's done some smaller projects along the way, but always interesting, even if you don't necessarily agree with it and it's not necessarily his best work. But for an August feature, it's good. Go check it out. New on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Well, we have Melissa McCarthy in Life of the Party. This is that film where she falls down. And one of the better films that come out this year called Anchezo Beach, with Saoirse Ronan and Billy Howie. And it's a young couple in their hotel room on their honeymoon. And it goes back and forth between the night of the nuptials as well as their courting. They're from opposite sides of the track. Really nice tension with what needs to be done by a young couple in England in the, if I remember right, the 1960s, early 1960s. So Saoirse Ronan's got a hot streak, so her latest is on video, so go check that out. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, here we go. On screen one, you have The Meg. That's the one with Jason Statham. It looks like, I'm hoping, he physically fights a shark. It looks like a Snakes on a Plane type concept, and hopefully it lives up to that. Otherwise, it looks like Deep Blue Sea 3. So you have that, along with The Darkest Minds. I am reaching an age I didn't even know this film was coming out, and I know it's based on a young adult book, and I don't know it. Screen 2, The Spy Who Dumped Me and Mission Impossible Fallout, of course. Number 3, Slender Man and Equalizer 2. Okay, Slender Man gets a PG-13 horror treatment of there was a brief period where this online boogeyman was making a presence, and somebody decided to make a film around it. At least it's not a film version of Two Girls, One Cup. And in Screen 4, Christopher Robin, followed by Ant-Man and the Wasp. Okay, so maybe the little kids will fall asleep after the second feature. Over at the Skyline in Shelbyville, The First Purge and Unfriended Dark Web. Oh, and we should also point out that Dark Web came out, about less than a month before Slender Man. So, if you like online horror, there you go. At the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, again, depending on when you're listening to this, Saturday night at 7:30 p.m., Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby. Hit and miss, but when it's funny, it's funny. And then Friday and Saturday, August 17th and 18th at 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Maltese Falcon. A great chance to see that great film on the big screen. Thursday, August 16th at 7:30 p.m., an onstage radio performance of Pappy Wilson Goes to War. So if you like radio plays like I do, go check that out. All right, I want to get to Dead People We Like, because we never have Dead People We Don't Like. And I usually have Mike Perry here to talk about this with me. But Charlotte Ray, actress Charlotte Ray, passed away at the age of 92. Obviously best known for playing Edna Garrett in On Different Strokes and then Facts of Life, so good run for her on that. But her acting goes all the way back to the 1950s, even being a regular on Car 54, Where Are You, in the early 60s. But I always check out the films that she has appeared in, a TV actor appears in when they're not doing when they're doing other things. But some films of note, 1969's Hello Down There. The earliest thing I remember seeing her in was she played Fielding Mellish's mother, Woody Allen's mother, in his film Bananas. Also appeared in The Hot Rock, Rabbit Test. Didn't have any lines, but she was the lady in pink, the woman that danced with Treat Williams on the table in the film musical version of Hair. A lot of TV. You Don't Mess with the Zohan in 2008. And her last credit in 2015, she played the elder of the family at the wedding of Ricky and the Flash. So salute to you there, Charlotte. All right, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back after the break, a mild rant, and then we'll dip into the archives. So stick around. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Socey. I've been asked about the new category in the Academy Awards. Simple. It's a joke. I think they already did this when they expanded the Best Picture category from 5 films to up to 10? You want blockbusters to get Best Picture nominations? Make better films. Sorry, that's just all there is to it. And I think the people who make the giant blockbuster movies and the people who star in the giant blockbuster movies and the studios that make the giant blockbuster movies, if they're not getting awards, they can lay in their bed with mattresses filled with $1,000 bills. I'm sure they're going to be fine. I know it's and then we heard right after the announcement of this award that ABC had something to do with it because there's a dip in the ratings. This and the Tonys are the only award shows I actually watch. And they do business. Winning an award does business. It's just a fact. I'm gonna be careful there, but yeah. So does this mean Black Panther is going to get one because it's most popular? And who gets to determine that? Is there a voting? Is it box office? What is it? So no, I'm not gonna count that. I'm not gonna care about it. I'm gonna focus. I still when the Best Picture nominees come out, I still pick out my 5. Maybe I'm old fashioned and get off my lawn type, but when it comes to that, but I'll take this crotchety old man for this concept and maybe over more important things that are out there. So we'll just leave it at that. Okay. All right. We got some time left. We're going to dip into the archives, and here's my chat with Claire Robinson. Enjoy.
Matt, can you hear me?
Yeah.
What's up?
How are you, Claire?
Good. How are you?
You know, I do a lot of studio work here at the station, and Wednesday mornings at 10, you keep me company.
I do?
Yes, you do.
Oh, I love that. So. I love that. I'm glad you're there on Wednesdays at 10. That's my moment.
Absolutely. I got to see you cook Russian food this morning.
Oh, did you see me poorly say Nastrovia?
Better you than me.
Yes, it took me a lot of practice, like about 2 days, sadly.
What is the 5 flavor forecast for 2014?
All right, this is so cool. McCormick for their 125th anniversary. I'm really excited about this because it's a company that has literally been around for 125 years. So they've given so much to us. We all know those red cap spices. They're absolutely amazing. But they're giving back this year. So for their birthday, they're kind of giving us presents. And one of them is their flavor forecast. This is interesting because you think that the flavor forecast is talking about the hottest flavors and trends and food that you're going to see over the next 1 to 3 years. But you think that it would be all about spice. It's not. It's actually legitimately the new flavors and the new food trends you're going to see coming in and out of kitchens over the next 1 to 3 years. And I think that it's such a neat thing. They've been doing this for 14 years. One of their previous flavor forecasts was in 2003, and it was Chipotle. And now that's everywhere.
Right.
So they're obviously right on the money.
So now, with somebody's, have you developed recipes for the new flavors?
I didn't actually develop any of the recipes. I'm just really excited to be working with them and talking about the flavor forecast. So, you know, what's so exciting is this is something that really helps people like me come up with, you know, with what I should be inspired by. So, for example, the trends have flavors within the trends. So they have 5 trends, Chili's Obsession, but within that, there's flavors like Chili's de Olivo. Now, Chipotle is one of the chilies that we all know, red pepper chili flakes. But it's, you know, they're telling me that they're forecasting that more and more people are going to know about something like Chili de Olivo, which is actually a chili I love. So that kind of gives me this inspiration to start using that more in my recipes, and hopefully people will learn more about it and actually be able to find it. They have clever compact cooking is one of their trends. But within that, you know, again, as I said, it's not all about spices. They're forecasting that people are going to start to use pressure cookers more and more, and because pressure cookers are more, I guess, multifunctional is the best way to put it. They'll be the new slow cooker. The way, you know, you can get dinner on the table faster than you can get takeout. So it's a really exciting way. They've written recipes, though, celebrating some of these new trends, and within the clever compact cooking, the flavor as well of tea. So lapsang souchong tea, is that something you've ever cooked with?
I have not personally, but now that you've mentioned it, I'll add it to the list.
You know, it's kind of like chicken or egg, which is predicting what, but they're forecasting that tea will become a hot ingredient for people that have these compact kitchens, these small kitchens, which I'm one of them. I'm from Tennessee. I moved to New York. My kitchen is so tiny, it's the size of most people's bathroom. That's pathetic. And so for me, I really have to think about every single thing in my kitchen. I don't have a pantry. It's my countertop. Mm-hmm. So I really try and use these ingredients in more than one way. Now, I'm a chef, but this is something that they're predicting will happen in everybody's kitchen. It'll become much more commonplace.
Well, it's funny. I think what you mentioned, the pressure cooker. I think everybody's worried about getting it locked correctly and, you know, getting steam shot in their face, that sort of thing. So I think once you actually know how to work it, then, you know, it'll be used more.
Exactly. But, you know, the interesting thing is it just takes that becoming more of a popular appliance. And for me, I would much rather replace appliances that don't have as much function with appliances I can use in more than one way.
Mm-hmm.
And pressure cookers, I mean, it's everything from putting together a quick chowder that has chorizo and this tea in it and smoky flavors of cumin and deliciousness. I'd rather have that on my counter and be able to last minute put something on the table than to have to think about it before I go to work, because let me tell you, I can barely remember my keys when I walk out the door in the morning. I'm not a morning person.
Well,
but, you know, it's, they're not. The funny thing is, you know, McCormick isn't selling pressure cookers. They're just predicting these really cool trends that you're going to see in kitchens, the flavors within those trends, like Mexico. You're going to see charred tomatillo. And Brazil, because we've got the World Cup and the Olympics, you're going to see guava and something called cassava flour.
Well, so what does 2014 look like for you? I know you got the cookbook. That's still running strong. And we hope to see you on the telly more.
Yes, I am. I am working on some new stuff. Fingers crossed that you'll get to see it by spring. I'm excited, and you know, in the meantime, it's really fun because I'm kind of in my creating phase right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm writing a lot of new recipes and looking for inspiration constantly, which is really exciting. That's why I said I'm you know, these recipes are McCormick recipes, but I'm using them as inspiration to write my own. So you might see a couple of wacky new ingredients in my few ingredient cooking, because I'm still sticking with my few ingredients. That's my thing, and it's the way I like it. I don't like to count on more than one hand.
It is less is more. I mean, I think five ingredient fix is one of the smartest concepts. That really brings it to, if you can do it with five, you can make anything great.
Exactly. And you know what's great is I'm so complimented when somebody comes up to me and says, oh, I added this ingredient to your blank recipe. And to me, that's flattering, because they made it their own. I'm giving them a wonderful base recipe that's good as is. But from there, that's how you really learn to cook. I want people to be the chef of their own kitchen. Mm-hmm. So when you learn about new ingredients and you learn about new flavors that are supposed to hit your kitchen, and you add them to recipes you already like, then you're a chef, and you are the executive chef of your kitchen.
Now, this is a film show, so I'm asking, have you been able to watch any new films recently?
Films, oh my goodness. Yes, I have. And I'm really excited. One of them has not come out yet. The Wolf of Wall Street. I was able to see a little trainer thing.
Uh-oh.
And it was awesome.
Excellent.
It was just awesome. I didn't even know how to tell. It was so good. I can't tell you. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
It's so good. I'm really excited. I really want to see the new one, The American Hustler.
Yes.
That's coming out. I think that's going to be great. And, you know, I'm in New York, so we get into those indie films.
Of course. Tribeca.
Yes, Tribeca. Tribeca. And I actually live near the Angelica, so I go there and hit the new indie films. It's exciting. Right now, I feel like we've got a good film season coming up.
What are some of your favorite cooking moments in cinema? I mean, can you see somebody if they know how to work in the kitchen or not when they're being filmed, movie-wise?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, we all seen Kitchen Confidential, right, with Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yes.
She really worked hard to get the process of putting on her wife, the apron, the way she put them on. It really is, for chefs, especially restaurant chefs that are in there every day, it is almost a ritual. And it's a very distinct, very specific process that's done the exact same every day. You don't miss a beat. She practiced that through and through, and I really felt like she looked like she knew what she was doing. She held a knife correctly. But yes, I catch all the time people that are holding a knife incorrectly, and and they're supposed to know what they're doing, and in 1 second I can tell they don't. One of my favorite ones, though, chocolat.
Yep.
That's not the sexiest chocolate moment on television.
It also helps that Juliette Binoche has the over the shoulder dress handing you chocolates.
Yes. I mean, it's just good. It was good. I loved that one.
Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. Go see Black Klansman. You deserve it. Next week's Film Sociology will probably go on stage a little bit since Fringe starts up. So we might have a very special guest who has a little bit of history in the documentary department. So tune in till next week. And until next time, take care, everybody. And go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of their skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free.
Rap on, brother, rap on.
Well, the only person talking about love, man, brother, is the preacher.
Teacher.
Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, humiliation.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!